This is the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio. You know, when someone says, what is the smart, conservative, legal position on this? I look for, what did Andy McCarthy say about it? And so we've got Andy live here in the studio. Thanks a lot for joining. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Dan. It's great to see you again.
So you've written a couple of really interesting articles I want to dig into. But first, let me ask you, when do you think this thing ends, the Mueller probe?
You know, it's interesting. I think he's always been on his own clock. And I do think there's a lot of signs that it's winding down. But I think to the extent people think when they say the end is near, that means tomorrow or next week or something close. I'd guess more like 2 or 3 months than 2 or 3 weeks. And I think, you know, look, number one, we know he has a grand jury that's open. Anytime prosecutor has a grand jury that's open, you could always file more charges and you're always gathering more information. But there's a lot of signs that it looks like it's run its course. And my objection to it from the beginning has been that it was really given to him as a counterintelligence.
Well, let's go through that. I'm going to go through your article right now. You wrote an article on January 5th called Trump Keeps Giving Mueller Reasons to Pursue the Collusion Probe.
Right.
And you start by the headline, you would think, this is going to be a Trump bashing piece. But actually, the first half or so of the piece is your caveat, right? It's your caveat saying—
It's a big caveat.
Yeah, it's a big, long caveat. And so, you know, at the end of the piece, you get to what is your criticism of Trump. But before that, you go through all of the reasons that you think that this investigation is flawed. And let me take it through. You say, and this is the second paragraph of the piece. You say, don't get me wrong. I am reasonably confident that the bottom line will be that there is no criminal collusion case. Now, how would you know that at this point?
Because the way prosecutors work, and if your point is we don't have perfect knowledge of what's going on, or I don't, that's certainly true. And I could be totally shocked. There could be things going on in the investigation that would surprise me and surprise all of us. That said, when a prosecutor is building a big case or building to a conclusive case, generally what you would do with the cooperating witnesses is bring them in and have them plead guilty to the main scheme, because that gets you 90% of the way home. So what you would want to have is someone to come in and say, yes, there was an espionage conspiracy. Here's what I did. Here's what President Trump did. Here's what X, Y, and Z other people did. What's happened in this case instead, Dan, are two things which I can't fathom if you're building to a big case. One is that the cooperators, rather than being pled guilty to a big scheme, have been pled guilty to lying to the FBI, which is kind of the last thing you would want to do. As a prosecutor, you don't want to build your case on people.
But let's assume for a minute that they're not necessarily going to use these folks, the ones we know of who've pled guilty, as part of the conspiracy, let's say even as witnesses or as participants, right? George Papadopoulos is not going to get charged, it seems pretty clear, as part of a conspiracy to collude with the government to defraud the United States, whatever the charge might be. So isn't there an argument that the Flynns and the Papadopouloses and the Gateses of the world have provided information that allowed prosecutors to go find other witnesses or documentary evidence or cell phone data or whatever it is to build a case and say to themselves, because they lied, we don't want to use them as witnesses, but we can build a case on our own?
I think what you would do in that instance is there's no reason to sentence them now. You would, generally speaking, sentence them at the end when you can make a decision about, do I want them to testify?
But let's say they've decided they won't testify. I'm not going to have them testify because of these lies. And as a result, they're not trustworthy. So we're going to use their information to go try and dig a little bit, find corroborating information for what they provided to us. And so it is possible that Flynn, for example, provided 19 interviews,
right,
that he provided some very useful information about people higher up, but maybe they say in the end, you know what? We don't need Flynn in connection with our case. We don't want him.
That's a perfectly reasonable decision to make. To my mind, it's a decision that you would generally make at the end, not when you're at an earlier stage of the investigation. You want to get the people sentenced at the end. And to the extent we have a window on that, the one thing we can say, and this is part of the reason why I've defended Mueller against a lot of the claims about, you know, witch hunt and all that stuff, because if you look at what he's done rather than what's been said about the investigation, he never once in all the cases that he's brought has even hinted that Trump is complicit in something criminal. No matter what the president has said about him, Mueller has never done that. And I think the best window we have into what you're talking about is the two cases that he brought against the sets of Russians.
Exactly.
And it seems to me, if you read those indictments, they don't completely dismiss, but they largely preclude the possibility that there was a conspiracy, not just between Russia and Trump, I think between Russia and anyone.
Well, wait, but they specifically say in those indictments, and their co-conspirators, who are
right,
not named.
Right.
So in addition to the, you know, in the indictment of the 12 Russians and the Internet Research Agency, for example, and Concord Management, which is now fighting that, not very successfully in court, you have repeated references to co-conspirators, not the dim-witted, not the Americans who got duped,
right,
but additional co-conspirators. Why couldn't they be who we're talking about?
Well, as you know, prosecutors always talk about unindicted co-conspirators. The indictments always say, even if you think you've identified everyone, the indictments always say, and others known and unknown. That's just good practice. I'm looking not only at who they name, but what they allege. And what I deduce from what they allege is that the Russians were concerned about having deniability. They wanted to be covert vis-a-vis the American side of the equation. I don't see anything in those indictments that suggests a partnership between the Kremlin and anyone on the American side. It's not to say it's impossible that it never happened, but we don't see it in the four corners of those indictments.
Correct. It's not in the four corners of the indictment, but since those indictments, and those two indictments came down, I think, about 5 months apart or so.
Right.
One was in February 17, one was in July, I think, or whatever, or 18, whatever the case may be. But since then, we've learned about, you know, the investigation into, for example, Roger Stone.
Right.
There are questions about, did he have advanced knowledge? And as a result, there are questions about, was he in contact with the president? About any of that. And again, advanced knowledge in and of itself probably wouldn't be enough.
Right.
But if he took any action to help even in distributing the information and the timing of it and was involved in the coordination of that, certainly with regard to one of the indictments, I would think that that could be relevant.
I think if he's remote from the acquisition of the information, from the theft of it, it would be difficult to make a case on him.
You think so?
I
mean, that,
I know there's a receiving stolen property theory.
I mean,
I'm not convinced.
I'm going to continue reading from your article. Again, we're starting with his preamble before he gets to his criticism of Donald Trump. Do you find that in an article like this, right? Where, and this, I'm going on a tangent a little bit, but in an article like this, in the National Review, that you get the headline, and are you worried about losing your base, your by saying, if you had just written, because this preamble is all stuff you said before.
Yeah, well, that's part of why. And the other thing is, I think it's the first article I wrote for National Review for the new year.
Okay.
So it was kind of a...
Because it got me thinking, it seemed so defensive. It was like, McCarthy wants to apologize to all of the people out there who are going to think he's criticizing Trump, and he wants to remind them, don't worry, people, I think there are fundamental problems with the Mueller investigation.
Well, I think that there are fundamental problems with the Mueller investigation, but I've thought, Dan, from the beginning, and I've said this any number of times, that I think Mueller wants to do two things. I think, number one, he wants to make a case if there's a case to be made. He will never invent a case. You know, all this stuff about you know, sing or compose. Mueller is not going to make anybody compose. He's a straight shooter that way. Now, he'll be very aggressive, and I think the guys who work for him will be very aggressive in turning over every rock to find something, if there is something, but they won't make something up. So I do think they want to close that loop. But the other thing I think he will want to do, because he's an old Justice Department and an old FBI guy, is if there is a justification to be made for the way the investigation was conducted that refutes the claims that it was an abusive investigation from the start, and it is controversial for the incumbent administration to open an investigation connected to the campaign for the opposition candidate, I've always thought that Mueller wants to show that the FBI and the Justice Department had good reasons to be suspicious and good reasons to take the actions that they took.
Do we know that they were investigating before the election, the campaign? I mean, we know that Comey admitted that the FBI had an investigation that was ongoing at that point into Russian influence in the election. Do we know, and you said because of the previous administration, so do we know that up to the point of January 17 that they were investigating the Trump campaign?
Yeah, I think if you look at the FISA warrants,
which haven't been made public.
Well, the parts that have been made public, the FBI explicitly says in every warrant that first they describe Russia's interference in the election and in the American political process. And then they say that they believe that Carter Page and perhaps other members of the Trump campaign, or the campaign of candidate A, I think is the way that they articulate it. We also know...
But the first FISA warrant was October 16, right?
Is correct. That's
the first application.
Right.
So Page is no longer a member of the Trump campaign at that point.
See,
is that not true?
Well, they had cut ties.
Yes.
But the thing is, as you know, when you go up on somebody's communication devices, you not only get the foregoing communications, you also get everything that's stored in the background. So they were looking to get not only his communications in real time, they were looking to go backwards as well.
Yeah, but again, if the goal was to be sort of, you know, going after the Trump campaign or investigating the Trump campaign, why make the center of it a guy who's not even part of the campaign?
Well, but then why say in the FISA warrant that you're looking
I don't know the answer to this question. Do we know that the one in October, because there were four renewals,
renewals. January, the one in January is right before Trump took office.
And then there are two more.
Correct.
That April are renewed after Trump is president.
April and July.
Right. So
June.
Do we know that the one in October, remind me, referred to and other members of the Trump campaign?
Yes. That line was reiterated almost everything that we were allowed to see was reiterated in each successive warrant.
Right.
I think that Mueller would like to be able to show that there were, even if there's nothing prosecutable here, that there were a lot of very alarming, disturbing connections between people, including people of high rank in Trump's campaign and people who were connected to the Kremlin. And that even if this doesn't rise to the level of conspiracy, it rises to the level of common sense suspicion such that the administration, law enforcement agencies had not only a basis, but maybe even a duty to conduct the investigation.
Well, and we already have that with Manafort, right? I mean, just Manafort sharing polling data with what is presumed to be a Russian intelligence official.
Yeah, I think the even worse fact than that that we know of is Manafort saying to this guy Kalimnik, who's a longtime partner of his in this Ukrainian business that he did for like a dozen years, that he was willing to give briefings on the campaign to Oleg Deripaska, who was a Russian oligarch who is very close to Putin. This isn't like one of these things where, you know, Andy says he's close to Putin, you know, speculation.
Right.
We know that Putin has intervened on Deripaska's behalf, even with the U.S. State Department, to try to get sanctions lifted, to try to get travel restrictions lifted. This guy's a heavy-duty Putin crony.
Right.
And if Manafort was saying, tell this guy I'd be willing to give him briefings on the campaign, that's really not good.
Well, so and this gets to one point that you've made, and I want to distinguish it between counterintelligence and a criminal investigation. And you say, again, continuing with your article, the original rationale for the investigation the FBI commenced during the 2016 presidential election Mueller inherited pretextually opened as a counterintelligence investigation. Pretextually is a pretty loaded word. So you're basically saying that...
I think it was a criminal investigation that they didn't want to call a criminal investigation.
And why didn't they want to call it a criminal investigation?
Because, number one, they didn't have probable cause of a crime. And you would want to have strong, I think if you're going to, in this system, if you're going to open an investigation that touches on the campaign of the opposition party, there ought to be strong evidence of criminality. I don't think they had that. And I think if you look at the way, which was really a quite shocking disclosure, if you look at the way that Comey testified, was it February or March of 2017? Mm-hmm. Where he publicly says, we are conducting an investigation, a counterintelligence investigation of Russia's interference in the election and any potential coordination between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. And then he goes on to say, and of course, there'll be an analysis of whether any criminal laws were broken. Now, he said that in a very matter-of-fact way. That is not a matter-of-fact reality. What happens in counterintelligence investigations is you are not trying to build a criminal case. In fact, in the Justice Department, counterintelligence investigations don't get a prosecutor. You're trying to divine the intentions of a foreign power to protect American interest. And if it so happens along the way that you find a crime, you throw that over to the criminal side and they prosecute it. I actually handled terrorism cases where that happened. But it's not a normal thing that in every counterintelligence investigation you do an assessment of whether.
But how do you know that there wasn't both ongoing at that time? Meaning, when Comey's making that announcement, he referred to it as a, you know, it's possible, as you say, that he used the language a little loosely,
right,
but that there was both. That there was both a criminal investigation and a counterintelligence investigation.
Dan, you and I will remember this because we used to talk about this a lot long ago. One of the reasons you would know is, the Justice Department has always been very concerned about being accused of using counterintelligence authorities pretextually to conduct criminal investigation. And in fact, even though the wall was a catastrophic set of directives that the Justice Department imposed on itself to terrible effect in the 90s, the thought behind it was not an evil thought. The thought behind it was, we have to make sure that we're not abusing our authority and that we're not going to be accused of abusing.
Which is why you have to go to a FISA court to get a FISA warrant.
Right, but you have to also, in the Justice Department, if you're conducting a criminal investigation, you need to go get a Title III, which is the criminal wiretap. If it's a counterintelligence investigation, you go to FISA, but they're always very concerned. And look, there are cases where you have both going on.
But it does seem to me Carter Page, as it turns out, hasn't been indicted, right?
Right.
I mean, so he looks like it was a counterintelligence. I mean, I think that's a legitimate thing to say, that Carter Page was a real concern. They tried to recruit him as a spy before.
Right, but he cooperated with the government, and it looks like they didn't disclose that.
But I don't think it
wouldn't be okay with me if I was the judge.
Well, you mean in terms of the FISA warrant,
right?
To not disclose the fact that we don't know that they didn't disclose it, right? Because we haven't seen the whole FISA warrant.
Well, but we've seen a lot of the.
We haven't seen enough.
We've seen the FISA. Well, look, the way the FISA warrant, there's a narrative out there that there's pages and pages of the FISA warrants that are blacked out. I've actually written a column about this. The blacked out portions, if you match them up with the FISA statute, they line up with the different legal requirements that you have to put in these warrants for purposes of FISA. So most of the stuff that's blacked out does not have anything to do with the probable cause disclosure that gets made.
So why would they black that out then?
Because it tells all their techniques.
But if you're saying it's just repeating what's in the FISA law, right?
Right.
Then why is that secret? I mean, are you saying it? You're not saying it just restates the law.
No. I'm saying what it's their showing that matches up with a requirement of the FISA statute.
Yeah, okay.
And they black that out because they don't want to, rightly so, they don't want to give techniques.
But how do you know that they didn't disclose in there that, for example, Carter Page had, I mean, again, this isn't, I don't think this is that big a deal, but.
No, because there's a section of the warrant that lines up with the FISA statute's probable cause showing, and that we have reason to think we have everything that involves Carter Page, at least before they started the surveillance.
I'd have to go look at it line by line. You say about sort of listing, you know, the various things that Trump has done and said recently with regard to Afghanistan and the comments that he made July of 2016, the Russia if you're listening comments, et cetera, et cetera. There's also the Trump Tower Moscow with Michael Cohen. You say the revelations raise suspicion in reasonable minds that Trump's extraordinary public ingratiation of the Kremlin's murderous dictators, financially motivated or worse, the result of being compromised because Putin was in a position to reveal that Trump was, and now Trump as president of the United States has offered a revisionist history of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, et cetera, et cetera. It is an article of faith among Trump's most ardent followers that the collusion aspect of the Mueller probe is a complete fabrication. You may notice, however, that not a single detail in the summary above is drawn from the Steele dossier. I'm strictly going on publicly available information that's either certainly true or highly likely to be true. It sounds like what you're saying is, you know, Trump just keeps making it worse for himself.
Yeah, I think two things. I think the more he says, the more reason he gives Mueller to continue the investigation, the more he feeds into the narrative that he's a tool of Putin's. But the other thing is, and when you quoted back to me that bit about not referring to the Steele dossier, most of what you hear on Twitter and in the commentariat is that the collusion aspect of the investigation is wholly the product of this set of quasi-intelligence reports that was put together by this former British spy, who we now know was being paid through a couple of cutouts by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. While I think it's really bad if that wasn't corroborated and the Bureau and the Justice Department used it to get a FISA warrant, I also think it's not correct. It's obviously not correct to say that there's no other evidence of contacts between Russia and Trump people that are disturbing other than the Steele dossier. I mean, it's just patently not true.
But isn't it the case every time people apply for a warrant, they offer sometimes highly biased, sometimes not corroborated information that they believe is credible?
Right.
And, you know, that's the whole point of applying for a warrant, is to try to confirm the information.
Dan, here's the difference. If I were to go to a court for a warrant, and I said, you know, I think there's drugs being sold in the next building, the judge would say to me, okay, so what's your probable cause? I couldn't turn around and say, Judge, I have this agent. He's this great case agent. Every year he wins agent of the year.
And he's been credible in the past.
Right. But what the judge wants to know is, I don't want to know about your agent. I want to know about the sources of the information that you're asking me to rely on for purposes of probable cause. And as the Bureau has said, they never corroborated those sources. They believed Steele. But that's not the way that you go about getting a warrant, because Steele, if we're going to analogize, was not in the position of a fact source. He was in the position of a case agent on a case who was assembling.
They disclosed that. They disclosed that he was working for a campaign in the.
My point is, forget about. I do think they haven't fully disclosed that, but
it's in the warrant.
No, it's not in the warrant. There's a very long, laborious footnote that does not disclose that he was working for the Clinton campaign.
It says, you referred to this earlier.
No, they
said campaign A or campaign B.
That's no. That was Trump. That was a reference to what we were talking about. It was saying against the
reference in the FISA warrant was to gather information against whatever the.
They didn't say in the warrant that he was getting paid by the Democratic.
Paid now.
Committee.
It's clear from the FISA warrant that the information in the Steele dossier was coming from an interested party.
A politically motivated interested party. You have to do better than that if you have better than that.
It's not clear, Dan.
If you have to go on for a page, detailing something. But the point is, they go on and on and on in order to avoid the thing to saying the thing that's perfectly obvious that they should say. What would have been the problem with saying it?
They do say it.
They don't say that he was working for the Clinton campaign.
They say that
they don't use
the word Clinton campaign the same way when you referred earlier.
No.
You know that it's standard practice not to name people in these kinds of warrants, right?
Right.
So it referred to either campaign A or campaign B or whatever it was. And it's clear as day.
No, I don't think it's clear. Well, we're going to have to disagree on that. But the point I was trying to make was that putting aside what they disclosed about his motivation, he's not the fact witness. He's not the guy who actually saw and heard the things that you're asking the judge to rely on for probable cause. He's the one who assembled that information. And ordinarily, when you go to a court for a warrant, you have to give the court the reason to believe the fact witnesses, not to believe the case agent who assembled the information.
It's a fair argument, except that I would think that still every day, and your point is he didn't witness, for example, the Michael Cohen in Prague, right? I mean,
right.
I think that's probably going to turn out not to be true, but we'll see. But the fact that he didn't see it himself and that he was able to talk to various people and gather this, and again, it wasn't a report. It was like real-time
data. Yeah. But what a case agent does in those situations when you give the warrant to the court is you say, source A dealt with this person. He's provided information to the FBI on six occasions, and they've been able to corroborate him each time. In other words, you say that with respect to each of the sources that saw or heard something that you're asking the court to rely on. They didn't do that here. What they did was they said, we think Steele is reliable because we've dealt with him in other contexts, and he gave us good information.
And they had other information in there as well, but
We'll have to see.
Yeah. Right. So, but you don't have a problem with just including the dossier at all, do you?
I have a problem with including stuff that's not corroborated, and I feel embarrassed about. But listen, Dan, at the beginning of this, when it doesn't happen all the time in FISA. They have to corroborate the information because it's written in their procedures.
It doesn't say corroborate. It says that they have to have a reasonable belief that they, you know, substantial. What I forget what the language. Something reasonable, substantial belief, or something that's true.
Corroboration.
No, it's not. A reasonable belief is not corroboration.
Right, now we're parsing what corroboration means.
Yes,
I'm not saying that corroboration means that you prove something is true.
Ah, well, what does it mean then?
It means that you provide support that a reasonable person could conclude that the suspicion is reasonable. Look, I've never thought that saying that you have evidence of something means it's true. I've never thought that saying that you can corroborate something means it's true. It means it makes it more likely than
it was
without the information.
That's right.
So we're using the same word, but we mean different things.
And I'm saying that every day in America, in FISA courts and in regular courts, people apply for warrants with information that both of us would call uncorroborated. They basically say, here's what we got. We want to find out more. This is why we're doing this investigation. We don't have proof that we're ready to go to trial with or whatever the case may be. We're ready to implicate a foreign government. All we're saying is we need more. This has been the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio.